Well, in the interest of time, we might make a start. Thank you for joining us on the session on the scheme update for New South Wales CTP and lifetime care. First up, we have Don Ferguson presenting. Don is the General Manager of the Lifetime Care and Support Authority of New South Wales. Don has worked in the disability and community care field for more than 20 years. Don started his career as a youth worker and social educator before moving into progressively more senior roles within the disability sector. He has led cross-sector reforms to improve services and outcomes for people with disability, including establishing the Whole of Government New South Wales Integrated Services Program for people with challenging behaviours. Prior to joining the LTCS, he was the Regional Director and the Acting Deputy Chief Executive Officer of the New South Wales Ageing, Disability and Home Care. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Vivian. So I'm doing a double act today with Andrew Nichols, General Manager of Motor Accidents Authority. And Andrew, I thought you were going to start with a rude joke about maroon-coloured tops and us being the boys from blue, boys in blue.
No, yesterday, for those of you who did the Queen Elizabeth scheme presentation, there was a very garish and I found overbearing. It was all maroon, you know, it was like seared in, and I had to leave the room at the time. So John and I, quite independently from that, realised that we needed something more of a blue colour, but soft on the eye, more inviting and warming. So that's our uniform today.
Thanks for that, Andrew. I'm going to give you a quick update on the Lifetime Care and Support Scheme from New South Wales. As Vivian said, I've recently commenced in the scheme. I've been there for about 7 months and I've moved over from the state disability system. So that's been a really interesting transition for me. So injury insurance is not my background, but management of disability services is. So spending the last couple of days here, hearing the discussion and debate about the reform across injury insurance and also some of the broader changes within community and expectations that are being driven largely by the NDIS reform and how that's washing over the injury schemes has been very interesting to hear and also music to my ears. So it's been very useful and very good. Before I jump in, I might just quickly pay credit to Stephanie Dong, who's in the room from PwC, who's one of the actuaries for the Lifetime Care and Support Scheme and has been very supportive in putting together a lot of the figures in the presentation that I'm about to run through with you. Now, this isn't me talking quickly. This is getting to the beginning of my presentation because we've reversed the order. So I'm going to just have about 10 minutes to go through update in terms of participant numbers, claim experience, some of the issues we're facing and some of the emerging trends and also the focus areas for the scheme. But in brief, I think it's worth noting that the scheme is very young. It started in 2006 for children, 2007 for adults. There's an awful lot we still don't know, but we're on the journey and things are going pretty well so far. So as I just mentioned, the scheme started in 2006. It's a no-fault scheme for people seriously injured in motor vehicle accidents in New South Wales. Provides reasonable and necessary treatment, rehabilitation and care. And it's administered by the Lifetime Care and Support Authority. A couple of quick headline indicators. Our funding ratio presently is 128%. Claims liability is a little over $2 billion. Claims frequency, we have about 185 new entrants per year. Our attendant care services growth rates are below the actuarial projections, and our client satisfaction ratings are hovering about the 80%. And it's time for our scheme to start focusing much more heavily on looking at client outcomes, which has been a big focus over the last couple of days, And it's a point of maturity for us and a focus for us moving forward. We're not there yet in any substantial way. And our strategic focus, apart from looking at outcomes, is to try and become a more person-centred scheme. So a quick look at numbers. There have been 965 participants accepted into the scheme since it commenced in 2006. Just over 140 interim participants who recovered to a point of not becoming lifetime. 27 passed away. 796 current participants remaining, of which 438 are lifetime participants. And as I mentioned before, there's a stable number of approximately 185 new entrants per year. Translates into about 45 per quarter, 35 of which have a brain injury, 9 spinal cord injury and 1 other. And somewhat predictably, participants are predominantly male, have a brain injury and are under 35 years of age. About a third of the interim brain injury participants do not become lifetime participants because of their rate of recovery and their reduced need for support over time. And only about 40% of people initially assessed as having a severe brain injury are still at that level 3 years later. This slide shows the proportion and breakdown of inactive to active participants. And also demonstrates the continued and steady growth in the scheme. So in the 2 year sample period that you can see up there, our active participants have grown from just under 600 at September 2011 to about 800 at June 2013. In terms of liability risks, the scheme is young and very long-tailed with a mean liability term of about 25 years. And a plateau of cash flow and liability in approximately 60 years. The small number of participants in the scheme mean that the scheme is very volatile, and our latest annual incurred cost is about $410 million, but our overall cost per participant ranges from $500,000 to $10 million. The scheme is funded by a levy on motorists, which is calculated as a percentage of the green slips. Other scheme risks. The very long tail means that it's important for us to make adjustments as the need arises and not to wait for future years when, due to scale, it will be increasingly harder for us to make corrections to ensure solvency. A potential risk to the scheme is also movement in the eligibility threshold, but thankfully that's not something that's been encountered to date, and that's largely attributed to the capability of the assessors that we use within the scheme, and particularly for borderline cases. Another risk, of course, which is not unique to this scheme, is the changing market value of assets and also the risk of inadequate investment return. Other challenges relate to stability over time of what's considered reasonable and necessary, and also the cost of providing those services. While the amount of services is uncapped within the scheme, the types of services that can be approved are restricted. And the experience of other schemes to date does suggest that there will be upward pressure in relation to these areas. And there's a particular risk in relation to attendant care services. And some of you may be aware that there's been a recent High Court appeal to a finding relating to liability for gratuitous care. And just last week, the High Court allowed the appeal, which has clarified that there is no entitlement for gratuitous care payments for scheme participants. There's also related pressure to pay family members to provide care, and also the potential upward pressure related to labour costs arising from the greater demand on services and workforce shortages brought about because, in part, of course, of the National Disability Insurance Scheme. And on the issue of volatility that I mentioned a little earlier, there's three variables of particular note, and these are the cost of claims, participant numbers and severity of injuries. In terms of cost of claims, there is a very high quarter-to-quarter volatility in terms of claim cost, and the liability varies on a quarterly basis by $40 to $140 million. In terms of participant numbers, as I mentioned before, whilst the numbers are reasonably steady annually on a quarterly basis, it's incredibly volatile because the numbers are quite small. And in terms of severity of injuries, in particular, the severity of distribution of brain injury is particularly important to us. 76% of participants have a brain injury. And the recovery pattern, service usage over time, and the impact on of ageing is still uncertain. I'll just go into a little bit more detail in terms of brain injury severity. The care and needs scale developed by Robin Tate from the Rehabilitation Studies Unit at the University of Sydney is used by the scheme to estimate the level of care and support needs of participants with a brain injury. CANS level 7 is the most severe and characterised by the requirement of full-time nursing care and or supervision for severe cognitive difficulties and assistance with the very basic activities of daily living. And you can see here, this is 5 accident years of brain injury numbers. And you can see that the yellow line for 2010-11 is much more severe than any other year, commencing with about 50 CANS 7, reducing to a little bit below 30 at 2 years, which is almost double any other year. You can see there the next most significant is 2008 with a little over 15, which is quite a significant difference. And the significance of that for us, if you have a look here again at the yellow line for 2010-11, looking at the costs, the severity of brain injury impact on costs can be seen if you look at the highest payment per vehicle being in the year of the most severe brain injury, 2010-11. And the significance for this for the scheme is a plus or minus 20% variation in incurred costs depending on that severity distribution, which is very significant. And we therefore don't want too many 2010-11 years in future. In terms of expenditure is currently running at about $15 to $20 million per quarter. In looking at the mix of expenditure, you can see there that attendant care is about 38% of the total payments. As the scheme matures, it's expected that attendant care will grow to be about 75% of total costs. And the significance of that for us, of course, going from 38% to about 75% of the full cost model. At the moment, the average care program is approximately 55 hours per week. But interestingly, however, we've recently done a study, a little sample of all of the attendant care usage for a 3-month period, and found that people were using only 60% of the attendant care that they had been assessed as requiring. And so that was quite interesting for us, that the actual usage rate was significantly below the assessed level of need. One of the things that we've considered as being an explanation for that is as the scheme matures, participants within the scheme, as well as their carers and their advocates, are becoming more comfortable with the notion of being able to have their needs reassessed regularly if their needs changed, resulting in them having less drive to make sure they use their full entitlement for fear of actually losing it. And so we're actually seeing, rather than hanging on to what they think they're entitled to, people are using what it is they think they need in the knowledge that they can have their needs reassessed over time and have their needs met appropriately. A quick look at trends. Spinal cord injury numbers are as expected within the scheme, although the number of incomplete compared to complete is higher than expected, and that's put downward pressure on costs. There's also slightly older cohort of participants, slight increases, you can see up there, percentage of participants with a brain injury over 35 years and spinal cord injury over 55 years. And also in terms of trends, there is an increasing complexity of eligibility decisions related to causation, comorbidities, and also complex late applications. And as it stands, there's no cut-off period for applications. In terms of current initiatives for lifetime care, as I mentioned at the beginning, we're driving the scheme towards being more of a person-centred scheme. That's a big change for us. When the scheme first commenced back in 2006-2007, it was considered a leading model, but 6-7 years later, it's time for us to move on and become more contemporary. We're stable in terms of our management of claims. We have good systems in place, but we're far from being person-centred, and so we have a range of different strategies underway at the moment to move towards a more effective way of supporting people to receive the services they need and have more control and choice over how they receive those services. One of the things we're doing there is running a pilot on self-directed funding to provide people much more freedom over who provides the services they receive. And of course we have that anxiety about, is that going to result in cost blowout? Interesting to think back to the observation about utilisation rate compared to assessed need in relation to attendant care. So that's not being borne out as an example, in practice what's happening. I just quickly want to read you three quotes from participants in relation to moving to a more self-directed model. This is people expressing frustration with the scheme as it currently stands. First, how would someone not in the scheme organise their life? It's not likely that they've got someone organising everything for them. It's sort of like you need to let me do something for myself. Another one, this is a parent talking about their child. They spend a lot of money on things he doesn't need, and then other things he does need, they don't approve. If you gave me the money, I would get a lot more stuff out of it. Given choice, I'd have less domestic help and more attention to osteo to loosen my muscles. Loosen my muscles up. That would benefit me more, but there's no flexibility. And then somebody who's actually involved in the pilot has said, it's incredibly wonderful, I'm very pleased with it and I can handle my own life now. So they're just little anecdotes, but it's really significant, and it does come through in our client satisfaction surveys, that people are frustrated about how rigid we are and what it is that we can improve. And our future direction is looking at how we can safeguard the long-term solvency of the scheme, but really loosen up the very prescriptive nature of the services that we currently provide. That's really important for us, much more so for our participants. Another focus is on improving employment pathways for participants. We've run a very interesting trial of early vocational rehabilitation for participants with a spinal cord injury. And prior to commencement of that trial, our return to work rates for people with a spinal cord injury were 20%, and for brain injury were 35%. And remember, this is all people that have severe and catastrophic injury. Currently, people participating in the project, there's over 80% of participants who are either engaged in work, study or vocational rehabilitation. So that's really quite a dramatic improvement from the pre-project rates. And so we're now looking at focusing those same practices within the area of brain injury. So just in closing, our focus over the next few years, of course, continued focus on scheme solvency. Our board gets very upset if we don't put that number one, commerciality, solvency. So that's, of course, a focus. Lifetime care scheme is within a broader cluster. Also within the cluster is the Mater Excellence Authority, and we have a strategic objective to look at where we might be able to unify the way in which we administer those schemes. So that's a focus for us. Of course, also looking at contributing to the development and implementation of the National Injury Insurance Scheme within New South Wales. Lifetime care meets the minimum benchmarks for motor vehicle accidents, so we don't have any immediate need for change, but we're a long way from meeting the expectations in terms of the mode of service administration around being a more person-centred model. So culturally and from a systems perspective, there are changes that we need to make to be more contemporary, as I mentioned before. But in terms of those minimum benchmarks, we've achieved those at the outset. We need to have a greater focus on health and social outcomes. We are making moves in this direction ourselves. There's an interesting five-year follow-up study that we've currently commissioned the Rehabilitation Studies Unit from University of Sydney to undertake for us. But I was very excited to hear the work that's being done around outcomes down in Victoria. I think the leadership you guys are showing around looking at outcomes is fantastic, and I'm going to unashamedly poach as much of that as I possibly can, I think. A continued focus on a more person-centred approach to the scheme, and also really the important balance to that as well is growing our own capacity as well as developing the capacity of the industry more broadly to rise to the challenge, exactly the same way as an NDIS, to work with us in a different way, work with our participants in a different way, and also to improve greater awareness and acceptance of people with severe injury and disability within the broader community. So thank you.
Thank you, Don. So we'll move on to New South Wales CTP and on to Andrew Nichols. Andrew is the General Manager of the MAA. Andrew has more than 25 years of experience in a number of policy, strategy and planning roles in the New South Wales public sector, including transport, ports, natural resources, land management and information technology. Prior to joining the MAA in 2010, Andrew was the Director of Policy and Reform at the Department of Transport, where he led a number of transport reform initiatives. Andrew is also the board director of the Personal Injury Education Foundation and a former vice president of the Institute of Public Administration of Australia and New South Wales. So I'll pass it on to Andrew. And obviously for Don, we'll keep the questions till the end in respect of LTCS.
Thanks, Vivian. And in the interests of thanking our actuaries, as Don was doing, I thank Vivian and any of the other EY team who are part of the MAA scheme actuaries. So thank you for all your help with all the slides, etc. You saw a quick preview when we ran through them, so you probably don't need to hear any more. You know, not much has been happening in CTP in the last 2 years since I was here. Remember, I woke up in Brisbane on the morning of the scheme review to have the front page of the Daily Telegraph screaming about Greg Pearce getting tough on the CTP insurers. So it wasn't exactly the best entree to walk in to scheme update. So luckily it's a bit more friendly territory today compared to 2 years ago. But yeah, not much has been happening in the last couple of years. However, we have had a major review and attempted reform process in New South Wales. I think when I spoke here 2 years ago, the then Minister for Finance had just issued us with the terms of reference to conduct a review. We conducted that review process by and large over 2012, and in February this year the New South Wales government put out a policy statement about where it wanted to go in terms of CTP reform, and in general that was a direction towards a no-fault statutory benefits type model system, but a privately underwritten one. So there was a firm commitment from the New South Wales government to retain private underwriting, but moving more to a model that I've sort of described in simple terms as sort of building the, you know, a car with the chassis of the TAC model, but the sort of the build, the body build of the workers' compensation system in New South Wales. It's the, you know, of the big four schemes in the two most popular states, CTP is the odd one out in New South Wales in terms of not being that kind of model. Suffice to say, for those of you who follow these things, you would know that despite the New South Wales government's desire to move to that model, there is not a friendly upper house in New South Wales, and so after a number of attempts by the government to get some traction around the reforms, to get some community understanding about some of the pressures that the scheme's under, in the end, the crossbenchers and the Labor Party in the upper house didn't support the government on its reform agenda, and so the bill was withdrawn. And I guess where we're at the moment is that the government is still thinking about where it goes next. That's ultimately for the government to work through. The government hasn't come back and sort of retreated from its preferred position, but there's political realism about whether or not it's achievable in the short term, I guess. We had a substantial process of public consultation both before and since then, culminating in a round, what was called the CTP round table, and I know I've got there's Adrian here in the room and others who were part of that process. That was a really constructive process. It was kind of, you know, really heartening to see what I sort of see as democracy in action. You know, it's like genuine democracy where people were coming together and discussing the pros and cons of different reform options. You know, and that was terrific. From our point of view, though, you know, the show must go on. The scheme continues to be under pressure, and I guess what I'll cover in the rest of my slides is really a summary of the issues, some of the metrics in the scheme, many of which are kind of trending in the wrong direction, and they're the sort of metrics that were driving the desire by the state government to look at reform options. In the absence of reform at a broader level, the pressure is still on us as a regulator and on the scheme more generally to address what we can in terms of ways we can improve the efficiency and the operation of the scheme, and I'll have more to say about that on my last slide. The scheme is still under pressure. We still have increasing greenslip prices, and on the 1st of February this year, New South Wales moved into the unenviable position of being the least affordable state in that league table that we always seem to have. When Barry O'Farrell was elected, he said he wanted to make New South Wales number one, but I don't think that was quite what he meant in relation to CTP. Never a good place to be the scheme leader at a time when you reach the top of that league table. We continue to have pressure in relation to greenslip prices, and I'll show you a slide about that. We've had continuing issues about scheme efficiency and affordability, and I'll come to some specific slides on all of these points as we go into it. Claim frequency and particularly propensity is increasing. We continue to have delayed and potentially even longer delays in terms of payment of benefits, and there's been an ongoing issue in our scheme that was very much sort of the origin of where a lot of the debate about reform came from, where being a common law long tail type scheme with high degrees of uncertainty, there continues to be gaps in terms of the level of realised profit by insurance companies compared to their filed profit margin. Okay, so just in terms of some emerging trends, for those of you who were at Neil's presentation yesterday, there are some similar trends, and you'll see that as I go through it. Yesterday, Neil made the point that in Queensland, now more is spent on lawyers than on medical and related treatment expenses, and that's the same case in New South Wales. Just to sort of give you an indication, in 2010, legal payments were $208.3 million alone, which is 30% higher than what is spent on medical and related expenses at $157.9 million. And that $208 million is the bit we know about. Just echoing what Neil mentioned yesterday, being common law with contracting out type systems for those who understand how our systems work, that means that what you can't claim back from the insurer is charged to the injured person. So we actually think that the numbers are even bigger than that. We continue to see more being spent on care than ever before. And if you look at care as a head of damage, payments were about 5% in year 2000 of all payments, and today that's at around 13%. So it's gone from 65.6 million in the year 2000 to 148 million today. The other thing to note, because I'll have some slides on the other dot points here, is that low yield rates is the other sort of thing that's really affecting us at the moment. We have the lowest yield rates, as you would all know, in the history of the Commonwealth of Australia. And that's impacting on the returns for insurers. When insurers have less returns from their capital, they need to make that up somewhere else, because we have requirements on insurers that they must be fully funded so that they can meet their liabilities. And so that simply gets translated into price increases. Just a couple of words about the CTP insurance market. Market share has been generally stable over the last few years. The NRMA Insurance Australia Group, under the NRMA brand, continues to be the dominant player in the New South Wales market. We have seen in the last 12 months an erosion of that market share. It was probably up around 38% this time a year ago. It's dropped to 35%. We've actually seen the largest shift in market share since 1999 in the current iteration of the scheme over the last 6 months, largely driven by pricing strategies of other insurers. I won't dwell on that slide. For those of you who aren't familiar with our system, we have an insurer component, a GST that's applied on top of the insurer premium, and then a levy, which Don mentioned in his talk, that sits over the top of that. I'll touch on the levy very briefly, because I guess one of the big pressures that we now have in New South Wales is public hospital costs rising significantly. With the advent of the National Health Reform agenda and the move to more activity-based costing, the net effect of that, unfortunately, has been that we've been underpaying for some years and we're in catch-up mode. So we've had to, at the MAA, increase our budget and, as a result, increase our levy from 8% to 9.5%. And in 2014, we are having a short period of time where we're actually going to run at 10.5% in order to just put ourselves back into a healthy financial position. So we've seen health costs go up by about $50 million in the space of about a 6 or 7 month period. So that's a fairly large impact on an agency whose whole budget is $180 million. So just to sort of put that into context. Premium affordability. This is the ski slope diagram. The red line is showing where affordability is tracking as a proportion of average weekly earnings, whereas the blue bars are showing you what the average passenger vehicle's premium is. And you can see that we have just about eroded a decade's worth of reductions. So we're pretty much, if you look at that red line at 36%, and you track it back to when it was last at 36%, it was around the early part of the 2000s. So 10 years of a scheme that had been progressively improving in real terms around prices, now back to where it was, and unfortunately trending further and further upwards. And as I mentioned, once we hit 36%, we flipped over and became the least affordable state, just pipping South Australia. And with the South Australian reforms that are coming in, now the gap is really, really big between us and the next least affordable state. Claims, part of the story of that U-shaped diagram is, of course, a story around claims. And you can see that this is the same sort of trend here, where at around 2008, not only did we see the economy start to worsen with the global financial crisis, that's when yield rates started to become much more significant in their impact on prices. At the same time, we started to see claim numbers rise. Part of that trend line is because benefits were expanded progressively between 08 and 10 with improvements and expansion of what's called the ANF system, which is our early notification payment system, irrespective of fault. But if you ignore that orange bar at the top, you can still see that the rest of the trend is still upwards. So we're still, in general, on an upward swing in terms of the number of claims. Oops. It's resulted since, again, you see, since that 2008 mark, it's a bit hard to read, but it's where that blue line starts to jag, and certainly dramatically jag over here on this line. The left-hand side, you're looking at full claims, so that's excluding the effect of ANFs. So that blue line shows that claims frequency for full claims has marginally increased since 2007, 2008, following the same trend line, but more significantly is the way that propensity in the scheme is trending up quite dramatically, which is indicating propensity and frequency are both measures that try to take out the effect of the number of vehicles that are on the road and the number of injuries that occur on the road. So what that's actually saying is after you normalise it for that, there's an unexplained trend upwards in what's happening with claims. And some of it is not explainable because of the change in benefits, which is what you see on the right-hand side. The left-hand side still shows that you've got this claim trend. Average claim size for minor severity legally represented claims, because most of that upswing has come from this group, this cohort. Minor severity, severity one, legally represented claims is most of where that claims frequency and that increase in claims numbers is coming from. And there's the story in relation to the average claim size growth since 2001 in those. So from sort of almost $60,000 up to nearly $120,000 in average claim size. So when you multiply that by a very large volume of low severity claims coming into our system, that's where our pricing driver is mainly coming from. How the scheme funds been distributed? I mentioned we have issues with efficiency. Since 2000 to 2012, 50% of all funds that have been collected from insurers has gone to anyone other than beneficiaries. So that's mainly in legal and insurer costs. And that's before the allocation of the legal expenses that we don't see. That's how the heads of damage have played out in the same period of time. But as I mentioned earlier, the proportion of care has risen dramatically, while the other heads of damage have remained relatively stable. It's worth mentioning that in the last 4 or 5 years, superimposed inflation, despite all of those upward swings, has actually stayed pretty much at zero. And the last 12 months is possibly even in the minus territory. So although we're seeing claims frequency and numbers rising, when you look at it in terms of severity and what you might expect to happen, we're actually not seeing superimposed inflation being anything that is driving cost up at the moment. Oops. Trying to get this to work. Claims cost out paid out by year post-injury. So I guess one of the things that perhaps concerned the government the most when they were looking at the reform process was this cash flow diagram. What that shows, blue line is New South Wales CTP. What that's saying is that in the first year after an accident, only 5% of the funds that are collected from motorists is actually being paid out in benefits to injured people. The peak of the cash flow doesn't come until around somewhere between about year 3 and 4. It's one of the reasons why yield rates has such a big impact, because there's such a long lead time that money has to be invested by insurance companies to make these payouts. Contrast that to TAC, being a statutory benefits scheme, a lot of money starts to flow from pretty much straight away. Final slide, just rushing through these, given that we've been given the hurry up. We've got a major scheme improvement project going on at the moment. These are things that we can do within our regulatory powers. We're looking at opportunities to improve the claimant experience, simplify and improve the market processes around green slips. We're looking at all of the opportunities to remove friction points in our scheme, things that are there by design that doesn't require legislative change that we don't think is adding a lot of value, and in particular looking at improvements to our dispute resolution services. We're not holding these things out as a silver bullet that's going to suddenly take a large dollar impact off premiums, but what it will do is help ameliorate some of those upward pressures that we're feeling at the moment. That's the plan. And that's it.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Andrew.